Come on, let's get going now.
From KMOX Sports.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
This is the Graybar Sports Open Live. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Here we go. Welcome in. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Continuing this Cardinals conversation, if you've been with us, we've been doing Redbird Rush Hour, lots of things to get into. We will continue this conversation about what's going on with this team, both from a negative standpoint with what we just saw in Chicago, where they just got their you-know-what handed to them in two of the three games. Now, the middle game when they won, man, that was awesome. That was exciting. A lot of times I hate it when really cool moments get overshadowed by bad things. You'll have an amazing comeback in a game, like just out of control, crazy, the way you come back in a game, and then you lose an extra innings. It's like, that comeback, it doesn't matter. It's not memorable now because you didn't win the game. You know, that second game of the series against the Cubs was awesome. The Joel Pozo home run, the way he was able to show off afterwards. But it happened in a series where the Cardinals just got completely outplayed in two of the three games, being outscored 22-3, 22 runs given up over two of those three games. Just not good enough, and it creates questions about what's going to happen with starting pitching. I don't think Eric Fetty makes his next start. I'm curious what's going to happen with Miles Michaelis here moving forward. Neither of these guys have been especially good for a while now. And, you know, Michaelis will pepper in the okay start every once in a while, and I think that in some ways is protecting him, whereas the Fetty thing, it was three straight non-competitive appearances for him. And I've talked a lot. If you listen to me very often, you know my rule of thumb very often is three straight really bad performances from a starting pitcher. That's when I'm starting to pull the plug and look for changes. Just the idea being one bad start, not a huge deal, not a red flag. Second start, that's where the red flag goes up. Third one is where it's like, okay, you got to make a change now. So Fetty got to that yesterday. Dictionary definition, I guess Michaelis is not at that point yet. But it also feels like if you're going to make a change here with Fetty, and I'm 99.9% sure that Eric Fetty's not making the next start the next time his spot comes up in the rotation, I would be shocked if Michael McGreevy doesn't get here and get here to stay. Just based off what Oliver Marmol said in his post-game conversation yesterday, where he said, basically, you know, to paraphrase him, you can't just keep doing this over and over. You got to find something different. The fact that yesterday morning with Tom Ackerman on Sports on a Sunday morning, John Mozeliak said that Michael McGreevy was lurking. That was the word he used, lurking, getting closer, obviously. I don't think Eric Fetty's in there. But in many ways, where this team has, I wouldn't say they have fallen out of the division race, but right now they've got some work to do because 6.5 games isn't nothing. Can you make 6.5 games up between now and the end of the season? Yeah, you can if you start playing really good baseball. And if the Cubs fall off a little bit, is there a possibility? Sure. But right now, it feels like the more legitimate possibility is this team finding a way via the wild card, where they're just one game out of a playoff spot right now. As we're a week out from the All-Star break, and as we're just a few weeks out from the trade deadline, it's shifted a little bit to what's the best possible configuration to get as many wins right now, as opposed to the preserving pitching depth and all those other things, which I think are important. Like you hear me say that, and it sounds like I'm being dismissive. I'm not being dismissive. That's a really important part of surviving 162 games, that being able to put yourself in position to survive bad things happening. And the Cardinals, to their credit, when it comes to starting pitching, they have done that. But you're at an intersection right now. And which way are you going to turn? Are you going to be able to plow forward? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And making a change in the rotation, where right now 40% of your rotation has been giving you more uncompetitive starts than anything else. It's to me, and I think to a lot of people, it feels like it's time to make a change. Is there a scenario where they take Fetty out of the rotation and they give Michaelis another start to see? That's a possibility. I won't love it, but I'm not going to be up in arms about it. But there's going to be some changes happening here. And you have the other kind of sidebar, not sidebar, but the other sort of thing that's hanging out there is the fact that you do have the All-Star break coming up. How you want to, is that going to impact any type of decisions that go on with bringing guys up, so on and so forth? AAA is basically, takes the All-Star break as well, so it doesn't have the same impact as maybe it did in previous years, but that's just another thing out there that could play into this as well. If you want to wait until after the All-Star break to bring somebody up just to kind of make it a clean start, so it's not a little bit of a herky-jerky start to somebody's full, like I'm saying somebody's, I'm talking about Michael McGreevy, obviously. If you don't want to have a herky-jerky start to Michael McGreevy's full-time entrance into the rotation where you would want to bring him in after the All-Star break, I think maybe that was something that was in the back of their heads at one point in time. It's probably not in the back of their heads anymore. After what just happened in Chicago, to me, that was startling enough that it's worth a decision to be made. And I am very curious what it's going to look like tomorrow. What is it going to look like tomorrow when we get to Busch Stadium, where there are teams out there, there are situations with bad moments and seasons for teams where you go through that, and sometimes it's right to just kind of stay the course. And for example, the Cardinals earlier this year, at one point this year, the bullpen was horrendous. It was terrible. And they made some small changes. They sent Ryan Fernandez back to AAA. They did things like that. But for the most part, they kind of stayed the course, and it came back around, and it became a strength, and it's kind of ebbed and flowed since then. But that was the right decision. The Cardinals made the right decision on the way they were going to handle their bullpen when it was really, really bad earlier this season. So there are times to just kind of stick with something, and that's something I preach all the time, because I think the challenge of making it through a 162-game season is a real challenge, and you have to find the way to manage your roster, manage your resources, even the way you manage games. At times you're doing it to make it through the 162, but there's also obvious and clear times to make changes, and I am curious to what... I would be shocked if there are zero roster moves before tomorrow's game. My question would be, how many roster moves are going to be made, and what is it going to look like? We got a lot of guests on the program today. Bernie Miklas, he's back with us in about 5 minutes. We'll talk through a bunch of stuff with him. Benjamin Hockman, Post-Dispatch columnist. He had a really cool column going into the first draft pick ever for the Cardinals. We'll talk about that. We'll get his take on the Cardinals as well. And then coming up next hour, because the Cardinals are going to be matched up against the Washington Nationals for a few games. A lot going on with the Nationals, their manager, their president of baseball operations, both being let go. Ryan Clary, who's part of the team over at 106.7 The Fan, our sister station in our nation's capital, and also he's also the host of the Locked On Nationals podcast. Ryan's going to join us coming up next hour. We'll be able to take your phone calls, your text messages, your tweets, all of that coming up later on. I'm sure there's a lot of people who want to get a lot of stuff off of their chest after watching the Cardinals against the Cubs this weekend, and we will certainly open up the phone lines for you. That's all coming up. Bernie Miklas next here on Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Total Information AM, weekdays 5 to 9 on the voice of St. Louis, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Welcome back into the program. We were just with Bernie for the last hour or so for the Redbird Rush Hour, which was great, but we get a little bit more of his time. He is Bernie Miklas. He is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling. Bernie, I hope you enjoyed the 20 minutes away from me. It's good to have you back on.
Well, I love working with you. And by the way, you crack me up when we're doing Redbird Rush Hour in particular, because you always go, this is a term of endearment, you always go bananas. like when you're just like disgusted with something and you're like, I need to say this, and you just let it rip. And if people, I know people that probably, we have people watching that show live, I get it, but I wish everyone could see the expressions on your face. You're just like utter disdain for certain things.
I'm passionate. So, I'm passionate. I know. Yeah. So.
I'm not making fun of you. I love it, man. Are you kidding? Coming for me? You know, Mr. Holler about everything guy. Yeah, I like that. So, but you got passion, that's for sure.
I appreciate that. I was reading your Redbird review today over at STLSportsCentral.com, and you talked a lot about the offense, and we spent a fair amount of time on both offense and pitching in the Redbird Rush Hour. But I was thinking about this. It is, the Cardinals have not had a consistent offensive group in a while, and I don't know if it's just the simple fact of they haven't had the players. They haven't had superstar offensive players. And you look at the teams that are good offensively, they've got really good, consistent, you know, high-level players, and the Cardinals haven't had that. But I do wonder to myself, and I wondered it more as I looked through a lot of the numbers that you presented, is there anything more beyond just having better players that's going to help this Cardinals team be a more consistent offensive club?
Well, that's a great question. I would say it's the predominant factor, I think, more than anything. And to use the baseball slang, when you say, well, what's wrong with the Cardinals offense? You get the answer, they need more dudes. Dudes as in like big, high-impact offensive players. Like if you look at the Cubs, and I had a note on this, and we saw the Cubs a lot, so this is a good example. You contrast them with the Cardinals. But now, Ivan Herrera could slug with anybody. He could be in anyone's lineup, but he's not here right now. So Brendan Donovan is the Cardinals' best offensive player, and if you go by OPS+, you know, he's 24% above league average offensively. The Cubs have five regulars that are well above Donovan in OPS+. That would be Michael Busch, Kyle Tucker, Suzuki, PCA, and Carson Kelly. So no wonder the Cubs can do what they do or what they do so often. Yeah, it's not always going to be as easy when, you know, when you're not facing Miles Michaelis, but they have dudes up and down that lineup. And the only time, you know, in recent years that we can, you know, I think you and I and just about anybody else could recall was, you know, the 2022 team. It was a special year because you got, you know, Goldie was the MVP of the league. Arenado finished third. There was a case for him to actually win the MVP. He had a great year. Goldie had a great year. Pujols had an amazing, basically from the start of July to the end of the season. They had so many things clicking. They had so many, you know, some of their young guys came up and did a heck of a job, like Donovan and Nootbaar. I mean, they had dudes in 2022, mm-hmm. but before that, maybe the second half in 2021, when their three outfielders, O'Neill, Carlson, and Bader, they were outstanding, but that's only 3 months of baseball, you know? So the Cardinals have not had enough, quote, dudes. And when J.J. Weatherholt, you know, finally makes it here, he'll certainly give them a chance to have a dude in that lineup, high impact. And they already have one in Ivan Herrera. And I also know that, you know, he's got a long way to go in his career, you know, but he's made it look easy offensively so far.
It's a good point about the Cubs. And I think it's also, I'm not trying to like shift this towards everything is peachy and rosy, because obviously it's not. But you think about a couple guys in the Cubs. If you removed whoever's in right field, whether it's Burleson or Walker, and you put Kyle Tucker, if you trade out one of those guys and all of a sudden you have a Seiya Suzuki in the lineup, if you have those two guys in the Cardinals lineup, there's not a lot of difference from that point forward. So the point I'm trying to make is, as far as the Cardinals may seem, Bernie, from being like that real good, consistent offense, in many ways, when you got nine guys in the lineup, if you could change out a guy or two, that can be a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden you had two high-impact bats to Herrera and Donovan being a really good offensive player. You had two bats that, whether they come up through your system or you get them through other means, and I think your offense looks a lot different. And the thing about having dudes in your lineup, high-impact hitters, it makes it easier for – I use Suzuki as a great example. Like, Suzuki doesn't have to be the guy. He doesn't have to be the hero. He can fit into that lineup comfortably without feeling stressed out. It's like, oh, I got to hit the home runs. Oh, I got to do this. He's surrounded by so much talent, it just makes it really easier for him to put up big numbers because he doesn't feel – the constant stress of like feeling like it's all up to him or whatever. So the dudes play off each other, and the more of them you have, the easier it is for some of your other players, because They're no one's looking to them to be the heroes, and they can fit in on their own time, working on their own game. And, you know, people aren't going to be screaming if they're struggling for, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, because everyone else, all the dudes in the lineup are performing at a high level. And I tell you another thing, Matt, real quick. It's funny because I took my 20 minutes or whatever it was before I joined you, because I want to start writing something tomorrow about, okay, how do they fix this offense? And there's a couple things really quick. Their performance at leadoff has really deteriorated. It's I won't go into the numbers, but it has really deteriorated, and that's got to change. I don't know what the solution is. There's a couple different options. The other thing, and I'm telling people what they already know, the Cardinals, especially in starting in June and into July, are just handcuffed by left-handed starting pitchers. I mean, they're really, really, really bad, right? Mm-hmm. And the other thing is speed. I mean, the Cardinals among National League teams are 13th in stolen bases, and they're mediocre in terms of their success rate. And they've also had too many guys thrown out on the bases. So the running game is not what I would like to see it be, but I also know they're not built to steal bases, so I don't want to see them run into outs either. But they're running into a lot of outs on the bases. And of course, one thing that would improve the offense is getting Herrera back, but also the guys that they have are capable of hitting. You know, they can't go missing for 2 weeks. I mean, they've got to be more consistent.
We always knew there was the scary thing about this team, though, is when a bunch of guys go into a slump at the exact same time. And I remember Oliver Marmol talking about this in spring, saying, look, this is a young group. There's going to be times where guys go into slumps. It just seems like, Bernie, everybody slumps or everybody excels at the exact same time.
It really does. It really does. I mean, listen, the Cardinals are going to lose games to the Cubs, and you know the Pirates have been, yeah, I know they were lousy in Seattle, but the Pirates have been an improved team. So when you go into a series and you're going to face Skeens and you face Mitch Keller, I mean, it's not easy to win either one of those matchups. But I tell you what, man, you know they've been, we're talking about the Cubs and the Pirates, just the last seven games, or the last seven losses, I should say, against those two teams. I mean, they've been shut out six times in the seven losses. I mean, there's no justification for being that bad. But to your point, it's a bunch of guys going ice cold at the same time.
Last thing for you, and this kind of bugged me the last day, because we found out that the Nationals move on from their manager and from their GM. And a lot of people who don't like Oliver Marmol and John Mozeliak jumped out and said, why don't the Cardinals do that? And just, it's... Tim, this year the Cardinals have 48 wins. The Nationals have 37 wins. Last year, the Cardinals had a winning season. They had 83 wins. The Nationals last year had 71 wins. There's a disconnect somewhere with people who dislike those two individuals so much that they take any opportunity to try to compare what is just a horribly wretched situation in Washington to a situation in St. Louis that right now isn't great, but has a team a game out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, it's what I don't like about whatever criticism. Listen, Mozeliak is a different story because it's just he's been around too long. He's on the way out. He's going to be unpopular, and that's all there is to it. I respect people that can give me educated, enlightened, legitimate criticism of Ollie Marmol and make the case. But just thrashing around and like slobbering around and spitting all over X, there's no reason for me to take those people seriously. Ollie Marmol, based on the run differential so far, the Cardinals are actually two games better than they should be in terms of their record. And I will remind people, like I always do, Ollie Marmol will finish this season, his fourth season as the Cardinals manager, with a better winning percentage than Tony La Russa had after his first four seasons of the Cardinals as a Cardinals manager. And Tony La Russa came into the job with a lot more experience and a lot more success in his background. Marmol was a rookie, basically. So how do the haters reconcile that? Well, with me, they've tried to reconcile it, and they're easy to just swat away because they don't base anything on facts. It's like, well, La Russa inherited a terrible situation. No, he didn't. Bill DeWitt and his partners bought the team. Jack and he was making trades left and right. They went to Tony before 96. They said, what do you want? What do you need? He put together a checklist. They went out and signed or traded for so many guys. That team had a lot of talent in 96. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to hear this crap about how, well, he inherited an awful situation. What, and you think Marmol inherited a great situation? They're about, after the Pujols years, you know, ownership, you know, starts reducing payroll. The farm system went bad. The player development system went bad. It got so bad they were behind in technology, facilities, tools. They don't know how to develop prospects. What the heck did Ollie Marmol have anything to do with that? The payroll going down and the farm system and the development system getting so bad that they're spending $15, $20 million this year to make it right and bringing in all these new people to do it. Oh, but that's Ollie Marmol's fault. Okay, whatever you say, champ.
That's Bernie Miklas. Great stuff. Bernie, you're brought to us by Saliga Heating and Cooling. As you cool down a little bit here, can you tell us about our friends over at Saliga?
I will, but I'm telling you, man, you have a bad impact on me. You got a bad influence on me.
Manager Ollie Marmol joins the Gas House Gang every Tuesday at noon. Sponsored by Seidman Cancer Center on the Voice of the Cardinals, 104.1 FM, KMOX.
It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We appreciate you taking some time with us. We will give you an opportunity to call in, chime in on what happened to the Cardinals over the weekend. But right now, want to welcome on to the program. He is a friend. He is a columnist with the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. He is Benjamin Hockman. Ben, always appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm doing real well. How are you, Matt?
I am good. I'm glad to be talking to you a little bit. I wanted to have you on for a couple reasons. First off, you wrote a piece going into the Cardinals' first ever draft pick going back to the summer of 1965. I learned as I read your story, which is awesome. But Joe DeFabio, a guy who did not get to the big leagues despite being that first pick. What motivated you to kind of go back into the history books and learn a little bit about Joe DeFabio?
Well, I mean, for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, obviously I write a lot of columns like the great Bernie Miklas did, who you just had on, where I'm sharing my opinion about the Cardinals, the current team, but I also love to tell stories about Cardinal history. And I guess it was last year I had heard about the first ever draft, 1965. So I marked it on my calendar. A year from now, 2025, it'll be the 60th anniversary. And sure enough, I did the research and found Joe DeFabio to be a fascinating fellow.
And one of the connections to the current team is he was from Cranford, New Jersey. And sure enough, he went to Gordon Graceffo is a product of the same place, the same high school. So there is a current connection to DeFabio, to basically the current Cardinals.
I couldn't believe it. It's not like DeFabio's from like Philadelphia. There's another guy from Philadelphia on the Cardinals. No, this is a small town, Cranford, New Jersey, and that's where Joe DeFabio grew up. And he was a high school phenom who went on to pitch at Delta State, which is in Mississippi. And his ERA, his final year there, was 0.55. It basically didn't have an ERA.
And this high school, Hubie Brown at one point was there. a guy by the name of Raleigh Massimino. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Who led Villanova? I mean, they're punching above their weight here for the level of talent that they're producing there in Cranford, New Jersey.
Yeah, how funny is it? Raleigh Massimino and Hubie Brown were both baseball coaches of Joe DeFabio, the Cardinals' first ever draft pick in the 1965 draft. And they, of course, both go on to be legendary basketball coaches.
I don't want to take away too much. I encourage everybody to read this at STL Today. Can you take me through I think sometimes pulling back the curtain for me is just as much as fun as anything else. What does it look like for you when you start going through the research process on something like this? Because there's a lot of information in here. I'm sure it took some time to get everything.
Yeah, well, whenever I speak to students, I always say become an instant expert on your topic. So I tried my hardest to become an instant expert on all things Joe DeFabio. And I have access to newspapers.com, so I was reading old articles from the New Jersey papers and, of course, the St. Louis papers. And I reached out to his family. The Facebook these days, you can find almost anybody. So I found his nephew and chatted with him. And that was a fun thing, too. His nephew is a card collector and actually runs an online store, and he didn't know about Gordon Graceffo, who went to the same high school as Joe DiFabio, and he realized that he had a Gordon Graceffo autographed rookie card right there on the desk in front of him. So, yeah, you become an instant expert, and I love weaving in Cardinals history as much as I can. How cool is this? Boo Ferris was the coach at Delta State. If you recognize that name, he was the starting pitcher in Game 7 for the Boston Red Sox in 1946. St. Louis, of course, won that game thanks to Enos Slaughter's mad dash.
I have to think, you know, for a lot of people who you've got somebody from the history of your family and you almost feel like their legacy goes away as time goes on. I got to think when in a situation like this and other times you talk with people, there's almost got to be a relief or just a gratefulness from some of these family members that somebody they care about so much or a story from their family they care about so much gets brought back up.
Yeah, it's a sweet way of putting it, man. And yeah, no question about it. And no, Joe DiFabio, he only made AAA, never made the Cardinals themselves, but he's a trivia answer. He's part of Cardinals history and be able to tell his story and kind of excite his family members. Yeah, I mean, last year, writing about Carl Warwick, the Cardinal who had, I believe, four pinch hits in the first four games of the 1964 World Series, and talking to his family, and Carl passed away this year, and being able to get that story, you know, have him be excited about it, his family excited about it before he left us was, you know, his honor to do that.
What a bummer he didn't make it with that name, Joe DiFabio. That's a great name. Like, nobody would have forgotten about Joe DiFabio.
Right. And then for years later, they're asking, where have you gone, Joe DiFabio?
Benjamin Hockman from the Post-Dispatch continuing to join us. While we have you, let's talk for a couple moments before we let you go about what happened over the weekend. Cardinals lose 2 out of 3, but that doesn't even start to tell the story because in the two losses, they give up 22 runs and everything feels terrible right now for the Cardinals, despite the fact that they're just one game out of a playoff spot. What do you make of not just this series, but really the last week and a half where they're not scoring any runs, they're not getting good pitching, especially from Michaelis and Fetty. It just, this team has obviously taken a bit of a left turn over the last week or so.
Yeah, I wrote for tomorrow's paper that this past road trip for fans felt like not just riding a roller coaster, but do you remember that one summer when they made the Screaming Eagle go backwards at Six Flags? That was the roller coaster ride Cardinals fans went on the past 6 days. A lot to be frustrated about, but Fetty will inevitably be replaced in the rotation, short term at least, by Michael McGreevy. And look, I'll give you some optimism. Those listening, here's a little optimism for you. The Cardinals have six series before the trade deadline, and like you mentioned, they're just one game out of the wild card spot, 6.5 in the division. Well, five of the six teams they play are under 500, so there you go. There's some optimism right there.
Yeah, look, I think this team is going to stay in contention. I don't know if they're a playoff team. I don't know if they stay in divisional contention. I think they're going to play games in September that matter. But they're in this really weird spot right now where they're still in it, so you have to try to win, but at the same time, it's not a year that was designed to win, and much like many of their problems over the last few years, they're in this very weird middle area, and I don't know if fans even completely know how to deal with it.
Yeah, the one good thing you could say is that there's a redundancy at the catcher position in the system. They have a lot of good young catchers. So if they were to trade one of those guys for a right-handed bat or what have you, it wouldn't be the end of the world. So that, there's some optimism. But, yeah, I mean, we watched the game last night on the ESPN broadcast, and they spent numerous innings talking about kind of this weird spot the Cardinals are in. But I guess you can flip it and say, look, they could be in the weird spot and under 500. Yeah. Instead, they're in the weird spot and they're still in the mix. And hey, hats off to Brendan Donovan. He's got OPS right around 800, and he made the All-Star team. He's my daughter Olson's favorite player, so that was an exciting moment in our household.
Okay, that's good. I don't know if my daughter has my oldest daughter has a favorite. I'll tell you this. My oldest daughter every day says, did the Cardinals win or lose yesterday? And if they won, she's happy. And if they lost, she just stomps away in anger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. That maybe, I mean, I'm not advocating lying all the time, but maybe just to save the day, just tell her they're on a big winning streak.
I don't know. She's fine. She's sick. She's fine 2 minutes later.
Okay. Oh, good. All right. Yeah. Okay.
So that's all right. Benjamin, we encourage everybody. This is a really fun piece that you put together on the first ever Cardinals draft pick, Joe DeFabio. I learned a lot reading this. I think a lot of people will learn a lot reading it. So go to stltoday.com and read it. Thanks so much for the time, and we'll see you at the ballpark hopefully this week.
Always fun talking to you. Thanks a lot, Matt.
All right, very good. Benjamin Hockman joining us here on the program. Yeah, I read this today, and even with everything going on with the Cardinals, had to get him on to talk through this because I didn't know much about this piece of Cardinals history, which is a lot of fun. So go read the story for yourself. Again, stltoday.com, and you can learn a bit about Joe DeFabio, the first ever draft pick for the Cardinals, but a guy who never got to the big leagues. All right, here's what we've got. So we got about a half hour or so, a little bit less than that, 7:20. That's when we're going to have our next guest on the program. We're going to preview the National Series and talk through a little bit what's going on with the Washington Nationals with Ryan Clary, who covers the team for Washington. Between now and then, going to give you an opportunity to get in here if you would like. We've gotten some comments coming in on the video stream, on the text line as well. We will open up the phone line, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. This is your opportunity to chime in. How are you feeling? Are you at a spot right now where, you know what, Cardinals are still just a game out of a playoff spot, even with a terrible couple games during the weekend? Or is this something that you feel like this is the precursor of things to come? We can discuss all of that. Don't go anywhere. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
All right, so we've got just a few minutes left here in hour number one. We're here to take your phone calls. This is the open line portion of Sports Open Line, giving you an opportunity to chime in on the Cardinals and where you feel like they are. We'll get some calls in. We'll break for the 7 o'clock news, and then we'll continue to do that after the 7 o'clock news. But let's start with Mike, who has given us a call. Hey, Mike, you are on Sports Open Line.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing?
Doing
all right. Listen, I'm actually here not to defend the DeWitts, but I will give them credit for a couple decades of really good, fun baseball. But I also have to criticize them because I squarely put this six-game deficit, six and a half, whatever, on ownership because they, and I don't want to say they're cheap because they're paying the money, but because of their stubbornness or whatever you want to call it, they keep running Michaelis and Fetty out there, and you guys went through the record. They easily, it's not, you don't have to use your imagination to see six or seven extra wins had they had some semblance of a pitching effort in some of those games. And it's just pathetic that they keep running those guys out there. And all I heard from numerous sources and outlets was how they kept McGreevy in AAA because they're so worried about having no depth behind him. Well, my God, the emergency is right now. Your issue is right now. You have been running out two guys that can't pitch, but you're saving somebody because you need him as an insurance policy. That is the most asinine thing I've ever heard in my life. You figure out someone else to be your emergency pitcher, and you get McGreevy in here, and you let the guy pitch. You eat that contract, and you figure it out. On another note, I don't see anybody on this roster that should be untouchable, except maybe Herrera. I like Donovan, but if you could get a good haul, I don't care. If Wynn or Scott or somebody brings a good haul, I don't care. You've got Weatherholt coming up. You're probably not going to move Arenado because of the contract. I really hate to see him give up on Gorman. He seems to be doing better as well. So what do you do? Because you've got Herrera at DH. You've got Arenado at third. They seem to want to play Donovan at second. So where does that leave Gorman? So I guess my question is there a possibility that they actually address that middle infield situation? And what does that look like in your opinion? And yeah, I'll hang up. Thank you.
You bet, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. So a bunch of stuff that you said right there. First off, I think I was all in on the keeping McGreevy at AAA to help preserve depth thing because you need it to make it through 162 games. I don't think that's the deal anymore. You're enough through the season, and Michaelis and Fetty have performed at a level now where you can match that with just a replacement level player who's going to be fairly easy to go grab, or maybe even somebody you have at AAA right now. So the moves are going to be made here moving forward. I'm pretty sure of that. As far as, look, you asked the million-dollar question. Like, what does this look like moving forward with such a logjam all over the place? And who do they – at some point, they're going to have to move on from players. There is not a scenario where Brendan Donovan, Nolan Arenado, Mason Wynn, J.J. Weatherholt, Lars Nootbaar, Alec Burleson can all exist on the same team. Maybe I'm probably missing somebody that's in – Nolan Gorman. That's another name that should be in there. Like that – there's just – unless Major League Baseball says you can have a 35-man roster, that there's just not a scenario for that. And even if so, you wouldn't have the playing time. So whether they end up being buyers or sellers at the deadline, I would like to see them start to go through the process of clearing the logjam there and getting on the path of where of knowing who is going to be those core members of the team and knowing who you move on from. Is there a scenario where this team trades Brendan Donovan? I wouldn't love it. I love Brendan Donovan. There's a reason he's going to the All-Star game. But I think I generally agree with Mike on the lack of untouchables on this. I'd probably put Mason Wynn in there as well. So my untouchables at this point would be Ivan Herrera and Mason Wynn. Those are two guys. And Victor Scott might kind of be in that because he has a very unique skill set that is something that's going to be hard to find. But for the most part, there's not a lot on this team that I would not be willing to move on from. And I think you want to get better, but you also want to clear out some redundancies that currently exist. All right, well, we'll take a break for the 7 o'clock news, and then we'll continue on with the phone calls as we talk all things Cardinals baseball. 314-436-7900 if you want to get in here. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.